You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors on the second day of the trading week, but more importantly, it's the last day of the month and the last day of the quarter, so there must have been some dressing of windows, hence the sort of... Hence the rather tentative trade today, I would say. With me on this Tuesday, at the end of the quarter, is the Tuesday Dream Team, the double header of David Shapiro from Sassman Securities, Deputy Chairman at that institution, also Nick Kunzer from Sanlam Private Wealth. Yeah, gentlemen, and starting with you, Nick, this time, it has been a relatively quiet day, hasn't it?
Quiet. I mean, yesterday was funny enough, surprisingly busy, you know, sitting in our bunkers scattered all over Johannesburg. Phone was ringing, deals were being done, and it was actually quite busy. And then all of a sudden today, I don't know if it was trepidation about people too scared to open up their statements tomorrow morning when they receive them for quarter end. I don't know what it is, but it was very quiet. But nice price action, you know, solid. Volumes were light, but... very much broad-based buying, and we see it not only on the local bourse, but if you look what's happening in Europe and certainly in the US as well, there's also sparking quite nicely. And call it what you want, window dressing, call it in, month end. But I would say it's been a fairly solid bounce today.
Yes, it really has. And David, this is I don't know if exactly there we are. The world according to Nick Kunzer. The world according to David Shapiro. Does he concur with that assessment?
I love our industry.
Go on then.
That, in a sense that we're such upright, honest, integrity, you know, people full of integrity. We would never do anything like that.
No. Never.
Why would we ever push prices up? And why? You have to look at a chart, because at 4 o'clock, we were actually in negative territory.
Yes.
By, by 5 o'clock, 1 hour later, we were up 2.5%. So, we weren't in negative territory. Apologies. We were down. We were heading down in a downward direction.
We're up about 200 points, I think.
Yeah, and then came at the end. But it's what the stocks are that were jacked up. You know, MTN about 17%. I don't know, Sasol 18%, Absa 18%. These are companies that have been totally hammered. Nedbank, all of these things just pushed up, not 1%, 2%, but you know, close to 20%. So you say, hold on a sec. You know, this is
what happened from yesterday. Yeah, 20% better.
Yeah, well, so I think it's the fear of people opening their, their statement.
No, I was trying to squeeze our compliance guys to put like a little sort of stamp on the outside saying, you know, those who've got previous illnesses or heart conditions or, you know, like you do in cigarettes.
That's right.
You put a picture of like a pair of
a health warning. That's called a health warning. Yeah.
Surgeon General's warning. Be careful when the JSC members open up their certificates with their statements this quarter. Yeah.
Yeah. One of those mobile respirators.
Respirators. Yeah.
Because no, it's not going to be that bad. I mean, come on, there may be some
funds. No, it's going to be bad.
Oh, all right, then it's going to be bad.
No, it's going to be, well, if you're in an equity market, Lindsay, it hasn't been this bad since the quarter since 1987. I mean, that's a fact. If you're in equities, I mean, obviously the balance funds and stuff are slightly different, but if you were holding a core equity or, I don't know, whatever, sort of a main equity portfolio, as much as you've had a balance in the last few days, it's still not going to be pretty.
I had several interviews scheduled for yesterday, the day after the Friday Moody's pronouncement with bond managers and money market managers, and they all cancelled because they said, and I could hear the fear in their voices, they said, Lindsay, can we do this tomorrow or can we do it on Wednesday? Because of the turmoil, they were saying this is going to be Black Monday for South Africa. But in fact, they've been proven wrong because, in fact, after the R186 going to 1242 yesterday, it has rallied very smartly today. So well done to the Reserve Bank for providing liquidity. And it's now 10.95, and it was 13.50 not so long ago, wasn't it, Nick?
Yeah,
it was. And so, I mean, 70, yeah, it was. And if you look at the rand, 17.80 as well. But we were chatting this morning, remember, Lindsay, and I said it's quite a reasonable accuracy that for every, you know, we had roughly 0.4% of the index. They were talking about $10 billion having to leave the World Bond Index. And they say for every, like, if there's a 5% move in the underlying currency, for every 5 billion that is left as an exiting, that kind of mitigates it. I mean, we've had a 22% odd drop in the currency since January. So you got to say, to a certain extent, yes, those bond yields have come in a bit, and I think, you know, kudos to the Saab for coming in and providing a little bit of liquidity. But you got to say, I think it's one of those classic cases which it, a certain portion, I guess, was already in the price. To a certain extent.
I heard two rumours today, David. One was that there's going to be an interim budget, another budget, because the budget that has just been rolled out by Tito Mboweni, the finance minister and the head of the Treasury, is now so defunct that he has to do something else. That was the first rumour, the one I don't believe. The one I do believe, that there's going to be an interim rate cut of another 100 basis points to take us down to a repo rate of 4.25%. Both, obviously, rumours. People are at home and they've got very little to do, so they have to come up with these things, and they convince themselves by chatting on their chat groups. But it's not implausible that we could get another 100 basis points, especially with the oil price, the West Texas Intermediate crude down at 20.
Well, there is no inflation. I mean, the inflation is something you're going to have to fear maybe down the line. But we feared that in 2008, 2009, when they introduced these unconventional methods called quantitative easing. And we still haven't seen inflation. You know, still inflation at its height was around about, in the US, why 2% and so on. You know, I'm more concerned about pushing money into the economy. And the stories that we're hearing all the time, Lindsay, are quite frightening. I had to go to Dis-Chem today, and I was standing talking to a few people within distance, you know, 3 meters
shouting
away from
them
and shouting at each other. But the number of and also talking to a friend today, you know, and whose son is in business, my son's in business. And their clients are not paying. Businesses are not paying their landlords. So you're getting that situation. To me, that's a lot more dangerous than cutting rates. What you need to do is help them. And I have to, even anecdotally, this one chap was telling me how his son is under a lot of pressure. You know, serious pressure, because people are not, he can't run his business. Now it's temporary. You know, in a month or two, he'll be back on his feet. Goes to the bank, forget it. You think they're extending a loan, forget it. You know, that's the whole point. They're much more interested in their credit ratings and their, what do you call them, their, you know, bad debts, credit loss ratio, sorry. So that's where we need the money. You know, we need to give him money so that he can just keep his family going for a month or two, and then we'll worry about it later. Then hopefully interest rates will come down. But I don't think the banks are doing their job. And I stand to be corrected, but I don't think they're handing out money to businesses like this where they can. And for me, it's a big concern. So interest rates cuts don't really mean a hell of a lot.
No, you need credit in this environment, not necessarily just 100 basis points or 50 basis points. I mean, on a similar vein, they were talking about the property market in the UK yesterday.
Yeah.
The FT was talking about, and they're talking about having to do some sort of a freeze on sales or on the sort of whole industry, because, you know, the bank can't go out, or the realtor can't go out and assess your property because you aren't allowed in and all the rest of it. If you're a retail buyer, so you just want to buy your first property, the minimum banks now will take as a deposit in the UK, and we know what house in London, like a 2-bed flat, 700 quid or whatever it's going to be, 700,000. The minimum deposit required at an average bank or building society is 60 to 70%.
Not a deposit, that's purchasing the flat.
That's 60% minimum in the current environment.
No.
So you're going to buy your first house and you've got a first job, you're going to, you know, literally we're talking hundreds of thousands of pounds you have to put down as a deposit. So, I mean, David, you're exactly right. The banks their wallets are shut and they're not lending.
I think that's, I'm quite happy to name and shame the people. I know we were talking yesterday, Lindsay, or were we, you know, about Fashini's and the cash bills and different businesses.
Yes, we were talking about Fashini just saying to their landlords, we're not paying. Almost like a force majeure, which is wrong.
Isn't that a break of contract? I mean, surely you've got a contract.
Who else has done it, I think, is Pepco. Well, they're saying that, you know, we're not getting the money in for this. We've closed the operations within your particular mall. You know, within your shopping center, therefore we're not getting money, we're not going to pay rent. Now, I need further details, so perhaps I'm a bit wrong just naming these, you know, the Fushinis and so on,
yes.
But and the Pepcors, but it is happening. And my whole thing is, you know, my whole worry is that, hold on a sec, you chaps can afford it. You can go to the banks and carry it over. The poor landlords can't, you know, because generally these are small little businesses, small shopping centers. Help them. You know what I mean? Help them by paying your rent. Don't put them in a position where they are going to fail. And I know why, because you can then come back and say, well, you know, we'll negotiate our rent downwards and so on. And my big fear about this whole lockdown is that it's the poor weak, you know, the weak businesses or the smaller businesses are going to get absolutely clobbered by big businesses, you know, and it's us. That's big business, you know, that's capitalism. Ugly.
Yes, it really is. There's good and bad coming out of this, but mostly bad, I would say. Let's have a look at the markets before we carry on our conversations. The dollar rand is 17.74, the British pound against the rand 22.05, the euro rand 19.50, the euro dollar 109.90, the Dow Jones at the moment. Let's go to the live prices from Nick Kunze. Nick, what have you got? Dow, S&P, NASDAQ, please.
Yeah, on the highs of the session, so S&P is up 0.4%. It's only 11 points now, firmer, but on the highs of the session. Dow Jones is about a quarter point in the green, and the NASDAQ is 0.45, so that's the big leader. But they're all sitting on the highs after opening down almost 1%, so they have turned around for the final trading day in the quarter so far.
I look back at those days 2 weeks ago when it was 5% here and 10% there.
I
can't get used to these pathetic 1% moves these days. Come on now.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that we're not seeing those is just giving the market some kind of confidence. I don't know if you saw what's helped the markets is Trump is coming out saying that the next package is going to be a $2 trillion infrastructure development or infrastructure spent on infrastructure. I don't know whether that's had some kind of impact as well, but it's the right kind of news to make. I'm still cautious. I haven't done anything. I haven't committed to this market. I just want to see the infection rate start to topple over or start to fall down before I can actually call an end to this. You know, and say, okay, I'm happy now. Let's go in.
Did you see what Mr. Trump, you mentioned Mr. Trump, David. Did you see what he said about South Korea last night at the White House briefing?
No, don't tell.
Did you see it?
No.
Okay, let me tell you. Okay, sit down for this one. A black female journalist in the audience said to him, Mr. President, can you please explain why the American testing rate is well below other countries on a per capita basis, for example, South Korea? And he said, well, we've tested 1 million people, we've got the best tests in the world, and I don't do it on a per capita basis, which is obviously a very childish answer. But he said, yeah. Do you know how many – in America we've got these vast farmlands and these vast open spaces where in South Korea everyone is, you know, condensed into little places. He said, do you know how many people are in Seoul? He asked the direct question to this woman, and before she can answer, he said, 38 million. And I thought, wait a second. 38 million. That would be the biggest. That would be biggest. That would be the biggest city in the world. He said, and then he said, I know South Korea better than anybody. That's a direct quote. I know South Korea better than anybody. And anyway, it turns out that there are 9.8 million people in Seoul. So, David, come on
he
now.
He must have meant South Korea, yeah. He must have meant the whole of South Korea.
As I said to Nick this morning,
listen.
He said that what had happened was that he'd read a Google information thing about
Wikipedia.
Seoul. Wikipedia. Uh-huh. And it had said that it's 38 meters above sea level. So when he saw 38M, he thought 38 million. This is the President of the United States. It's very funny. Yeah, let's get on. What else do we see? So should we have a look at the movers up and down? And Nick, you can start there because you often get them a little bit faster than I do, and I only get the big ones. So what have you seen outside of the big ones?
Okay, so far we've got outside of the big ones, HCR, Hoskin Consolidated, up 20% today at closing at 24 and 40 or 4 and 60 move. That's a big move.
Yes.
Seems a lot of smaller caps. African Rainbow Capital Investments up 20%, 19.3%.
Gosh.
We're outside of this. I mean, Hammerson squeezing up 15.4%. On Took Holdings, even though that thing is still around, 14% up today. So that's the smaller. So definitely a bit of buying in the smaller cap space today for whatever reason.
Okay, let's have a look at the big ones. On the upside, we've got MTN at 47.88 up 18%. Sasol up 17.25%, was well over 20% higher early on. APSA Group, 17% to the good. Hammerson up 15.5% and Nedcor up nearly 14%. It's not right, I don't think, David, that banks should be up 17% and 14%. It's not wrong, but it's not right.
They've had an enormous, they've had a lot of sell-offs.
Yes.
And they've been absolutely clobbered. And obviously, month end, some people are squaring off their positions. It's mixed territory. I don't know anything about
it. It's my territory.
When I say that, both you and Lindsay understand the derivative and the options markets a lot better than I do. You know, I look at this as an old time trader and say, how can a share like that suddenly between 4 and 5 go up 18%? Who came rushing in? You know, were there people clamoring, we've got to get in before tomorrow, before April Fool's Day? I don't know. But it just seems totally unusual.
Fairly apt, April Fool's Day.
Yeah, I know. So there's no doubt that there's people either squaring their shorts or alternatively wanting to massage what their clients are going to see. And I'm sure that a 17% move in APSA for anybody who holds it is going to look a lot better than it was yesterday. It doesn't hide where we are. You know, I still think that when you read, you know, and you mentioned it yesterday when we were chatting, Lindsay, you know, a whole lot of SENS announcements are coming out about the effect of the virus. And it's tragic, you know, what it's doing to businesses. We had a whole lot more today. So, you know, for the markets to be moving up like that, it's unusual.
It is unusual.
I'll tell you what, it's unusual for a South African environment.
Yeah.
I mean, you're sitting on the S&P 500, you're used to seeing shares open up and down 40% sometimes. Yeah. It's quite easy.
Yeah.
This is very unusual for the JSE. I don't recall seeing, even in the top 40 space, 18% in APSA. I've never seen that before.
You see, honestly, you can't do that. You can't do that at the top end of the market. So you couldn't do that with all our large global stocks. You know, we just haven't got the money to manipulate them. So you can't do it. Process is up 0.5%. You know, ABN Bev up about 3.5%, which has got to do half currency, half what's happening. So if you look at the top end of the market and all the high cap stocks, you haven't got it. But once we get to SA Inc., you can party. You know, you can do whatever you want. You want to push them up, you can. You want to push them down, you can. That's it. And that's why I think in S&P or in FTSE and that, you can't do that. You know, there's such a wide market that you can't fiddle the books. It's not as easy as it is here.
It's also easier to do when half the market makers and traders and brokers are, you know, sitting in their extended bedrooms trying to get fiber optic cabling. You know, it is very illiquid markets. And this is ripe. It's an absolute perfect time if you want to sort of push the stock around a little bit outside of the main tiers. Mm. It's very easy.
David, in the old days on Diagonal Street, when it was a closed shop, a gentleman's club or an ungentlemanly club, would you get together? Would some people get together and say, we want Old Mutual to close at this level for the end of the quarter? Would that happen?
No
and
doubt.
Could it happen?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Go on,
oh,
then.
Yes.
Tell us stories.
No, I mean, of course they would, you know, because you were matey-mate, you know. And you'd say, listen, I need to get this up there, and chaps would turn a blind eye, and, you know, 1 minute to 4, so-and-so would come through. So I've seen it there. You could physically see it happening. And I used to, you could shake your head and just say, oh, boy, you know, like, oh, boy. But this is just a slightly different version of that. So that's why I laugh. And I say it maybe with a little bit of humor because I've been there a long time, and the club doesn't change. You know, the need to push up prices. You know, to massage prices for the month end or for the year end, whatever it is nothing new. But you can't catch them. You know, and you dare do what I'm doing now. You know, question their integrity. You know, don't ever do that. Anyway, we're going to live with it. It's never going to go. But you have to smile.
Yes, you do, I suppose, but the markets are too big these days. But I can imagine on Diagonal Street, a couple of the lads would get together and say, listen, if, unless this happens, I'm in big, big trouble with my boss or something because of my underperformance or whatever. Let's have a look at the downside now, because today has generally been a pretty good day. So if I'm going to go there, I've got DRD Gold down 9%, Sappi down 8.2%. That's been a noisy one recently. Goldfields down 7.6%, Harmony down 7%, and Sibanye down 6.1%. It's almost to me as though with the gold price holding quite nicely above 1600, someone's almost anticipating from these gold shares going down, Nick, that the rand is going to strengthen and the worst of the rand has been seen. This is the sense I'm getting at the moment.
I think you're right, but I'd also throw in the fact that a lot of these miners have shut up shop. The shafts are not going down underground, and you know, they've been told by the South African presidency to close up business from the South African environment. So I think throw that into the pot as well with a strengthening rand, and I think you've got your answer there too.
Okay, David.
As much as these spot prices look quite attractive and they're running, I mean, platinum's up, where's platinum? Up another 3 or 4% at the moment. These miners are, they're gonna battle in the next couple of weeks while their mines are shut, I think.
David, would you say that?
I think globally the rand is looking. I think we saw the worst at 18, and now it's hard to call it. But I think the news is out. We've done it, and now as we start to get a slight improvement in sentiment on global markets, you're going to see a withdrawal from safe havens, and I would imagine that the dollar does start to give back some of its ground as a little bit of more sense comes into markets. So I wouldn't, I would back the rand coming back, I mean, improving. I would also back gold and other precious metals going down. You saw it in our yields. You know, that's what you told me there. I didn't realize it. You know, the fact that there's been such an improvement in the underlying yields. Yes, admittedly, you might have had government coming in, but I think that's a big move. You know, that's a very important development.
Yeah, it's a big move. I can go. I mean, if I look at just to reiterate what you're saying, I mean, if I look at, the 10-year, which is the R156, I mean, a 186, I mean, at one point, that was almost close to 14% last week, Wednesday at the worst. 14%. It's 10.9.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a 300 basis point move, even though it's an emerging market bond, that's significant as your cost of borrowing as a country. Yeah. Significant.
Yeah. I think, you know, you don't know where we're heading. I still think we're very precarious here. I'm still very nervous about the underlying economy. But markets are a lot bolder than we are. And I think those movements are important. You know, would you put money into the RSA stock now at these kind of levels? I'm not sure.
I think, David, you know, the markets always, we always say they're forward looking. They tend to be more forward looking than even I'm comfortable with at the moment. But what we've seen the last few, I guess the last week or two, is the bond yields in the States sort of almost like deflating, the sort of risk slowly coming off. We've seen the VIX, which was out at 82% at its worst. So the VIX is back now at 56. So that's also a 40 percentage vol move. And if you look I think if you look outside our window as well, you know, you look at like China's starting to slowly open up again.
Yeah.
Believe or not, the manufacturing numbers this morning, we all take them with a pinch of salt. But Wanghu was 100 internal flights flying out of there this week already. So I think maybe the market can kind of see where we need to get to. We just don't know how long it's going to take. It took the Chinese 2 months. We're talking about 21 days. But maybe the market in the U.S. as well are starting to – I mean, it's obviously a very optimistic tone, but too optimistic for me. But maybe they can see where we need to get to this light end of the tunnel kind of thing.
What is the hedge against the currency? I mean, if you bought South African bonds and you wanted to hedge the currency, what's the cost? So if you bought at 11%, call it 186s, what would it cost you to hedge the currency?
A lot.
Again, area, is it? I'm not familiar with that.
That's why I think that we're not as popular as we should be when you've got, let's say, inflation predicted to come down to 3 to 3.5%. You've got a bond yield, the 10-year bond yield at 11%. So you've got this massive real yield. But, of course, then you have to manage the currency. And I think, Nick, that would take a few percent away from that or a couple of percent away from it. I'm not sure. But I've always been told that people just shy away from it because of the cost of hedging.
Yeah, your cost of hedging is expensive. And so the cost of borrow on the rand, which you have to hedge, which you have to pay, is probably, I would have said, 150, 200 basis points on top.
Yes.
And then there's an extra cost on top. Of course, every quarter when you trade these contracts, you basically roll the currency and you give away probably another 40, maybe 45 basis points on top. Yeah. So you're right. It's not as sort of vanilla as buy that and sell that. You're right. And there's what they call, you know, slippage in our business. There's quite a lot of slippage trading in the South African space. And the spreads are wide in South Africa. It's not these very tight spreads you get in other currencies like the pound sterling cable or something, you know. Rand is a lot wider. So it's not as simple as that. And I must also add, gents, I mean, don't forget, you know, I think it would have fallen off the sort of buying list for a few people because of Friday's Moody's decision. So, you know, a lot of houses and hedgies or whatever have mandates. They can't invest in country in assets which are junk or below investment grade. So I think we lost quite a lot of potential there too, as well.
It hasn't been priced in yet, eh?
No, I don't think so.
Because there is a delay apparently in rebalancing that.
The WGBI, the WGBI, the World Government Bond Index, has delayed the rejigging of the index to exclude South Africa for a month.
Yeah.
And that's about 4% of the index. But people obviously
it's
selling.
It's going to be April. It's going to be in April. Yeah. And as we said in the intro, you know, a 5% move in the currency is equal to it basically offsets about a $5 billion outflow of a local country. And as I said, we've done, you know, quite a bit already. So, but yeah, it is a delay. We might see a little bit more pressure coming in closer to April.
I was talking to a chief economist at some institution today, and I suddenly realized that I arrived in South Africa on February the 6th, 1988. Apartheid was being unraveled, was being dismantled. It wasn't official. There was no democracy, obviously, until the election in 1994. But essentially, the country was free. Mixed couples, everyone was allowed to mix together, all that sort of thing. So it was fine. It was almost like a frontier place to come. So I came. And when I remember exchanging some pounds, and it was 1.95.
Yeah.
The dollar rand was 1.95, and there was also the parallel, or rather the associated currency, the financial rand. And so it's gone from, let's call it 2 to 18 in, what is that, 32 years. From 2 to 18 in 32 years. So by the same, let's say in another 20 years, it's going to be 40, 45. Something like that. I mean, that can happen, can't it, David? You've seen it.
Yeah, it can happen. You know, that's. I think that's a tragedy because it's ironic because I've been sitting here also just going through certain invoices. I've always been buying. You know, I've been buying art for a long time, and I used to buy a lot from the UK at certain galleries. And when I said, "How did I ever afford these?" You know, because I can't afford them today, and the art that I was buying there, it was like 3 to the rand. You know, this was in the 80s. It was kind of, what did you call it, 190 or 2? I mean, it was incredible. So if it was 1,000 rand, you know, it cost you 2,000 pounds, it was, you know, it was affordable. Or, 1,000 pounds was 2,000 rand. So it was very affordable. You know, it's and now today it's 20,000. So the stuff that I've got, you're not gonna pay 20,000 rand. I say, hold on a sec, I'm not gonna buy that for 20,000. No. So it's remarkable how rich we were then, and how poor we have become, and I mean that, you know, I mean that, and I see it from, you know, with a daughter in New York. I bought an apartment 7-8 years ago, and yeah, it was. I did it because of the hotel fees and you know, it was an economic decision, not a luxury. I did it because the economics was right. And when I pay my monthly levies now, it kills me because in those days, 7-8 years ago, when I bought the apartment, it was 7 to the rand. Now we're 17 to the rand.
Sell some art, David. You'll be all right.
So, you know, what I'm trying to say to you is that suddenly what wasn't an issue suddenly becomes an issue. And they say, hold on a sec, this is hurting. You know, this is really hurting me now. I never felt that way. And I think that's going to continue.
Nick, you worked in London and lived in London, and don't you find that I was in South Africa for 28 years. You just get used to it, and it's almost as though if this sort of thing happened in, for example, the United Kingdom, you suddenly saw the pound go from 1.20 against the US dollar to 15, or rather, $1 bought £15 or something like that. There would be an outcry. It's like the lies from Donald Trump, 38,000 lies, Nick, you were saying this morning, and this outrageous thing about the capital of Seoul being 38 million when it's only 10 million. It's outrageous, but you just get used to it. And in South Africa, we have become used to crime and corruption and a weakening currency, and nobody seems to give a shit anymore.
Lindsay, you know, the pound was at with Brexit recently when Johnson was elected. We were 131, 132. Look where we are now. Yes. I mean, that's a big move. And you know where it affects? I mean, people live on the edge, and it affects tourism. It affects a lot of issues when you do find a depreciation of the currency. The only problem with us at these levels, we're not seeing the hordes come in. I think they're more fearful of crime and other kind of issues. But I mean, technically, they should be, you know, they should be coming here. How much is a beer? Work it out. You know, what does a beer cost you?
Exactly.
Oh, here, 120 rand.
I saw a foreign exchange dealer talking about moaning about how he couldn't trade the sterling at the moment. He called it the British peso. He says, can this thing move 6 cents in a week? But also the pound's also been all over the place.
Yeah, that's right.
Real sort of moves in these currencies at the moment.
Gentlemen, let's have a look at the closing JSE indices, please, Nick Kunze, on this last day of the quarter.
Last day of the quarter, saved by just the bell, 2.47% up in the top 40, just shy of 1,000 points, 981 points up.
Well done.
40,738, the handle on that. JSE all share, that was 2.48% firmer, closing up quarter, 1,076 points higher. 44,490. And if we drill down into the various indices, there is nothing in the red. It's a nice day to finish up. Utilities, 14.29% up on the utilities index. Financials had a cracking day, 6.21% firmer. Industrials, 4.37% firmer. Even energy shares led by Sasol, 2.16%. And basic materials, even though there's a couple of miners in the red, overall the index finishing up 0.44% firmer to finish out the quarter for 2020.
My only window dressing quote that I can find goes as follows from a chap called Mark Bryant. He says the following, and this is what he'll be saying tomorrow morning. It's the first day of the quarter, which means there was a lot of end quarter window dressing yesterday. So a lot of people who bought yesterday are looking for reasons to sell today. Do you think that's going to happen, David? Do you think there's going to be a sell-off tomorrow? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it took much of an effort to get the prices off. They'll probably come back a little. But, you know, it's been so hard to guess how the market does respond. But if U.S. markets continue along the path that they're there, it could hold. Mm. You know, if there's a strong feeling of improved sentiment here, I'm still battling to find it. I'm happy as anything that it's there. But, when you don't feel that way, I'm still a bit cautious. I still think that we need kind of another half a leg. I don't want a full leg, but I just need a little bit of sell off there to know that this is all over.
Look, they did, interesting enough, the consumer confidence numbers out in the States for last month, and it was right in the mix of all the noise. Came out quite a bit better than expected. It was very surprising. They were looking for like 110. Came out like 120, 125.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So the U.S. consumer, which as we know is a massive part of U.S. GDP, like the world, America needs a strong U.S. consumer. And by all intents and purposes, according to today's number, holding up a little bit, or holding up still.
Just going to open my beer. Hold on.
Gosh,
there we go. And just, I don't think we quite realize the extent to which the tentacles of this coronavirus and this crisis, how far they extend. Because I was sort of voice hunted a while ago, and they said, Lindsay, come and do some voice work. So I sort of forgot about it because I was too busy doing other things stupidly. And I phoned the company today, and there's a lady obviously working from home, one of the biggest agencies in London in the Soho district, the sort of creative district of Soho. And I said, what do I do? She said, well, I don't think you should really do anything, Lindsay, because we're closed for 2 or 3 months. None of the studios are operating because of the coronavirus. People don't want to be in enclosed spaces together. Nobody's advertising because there's nothing to advertise because people can't buy things or don't want to buy things unless it's because. So there is absolutely no demand for anything. Yeah. And you think to yourself, this tiny little business, and yet it's affecting so many people's lives. They've got hundreds of people on their books who are not getting paid. And David, it's scary. Every business in the world is being affected.
No, I know. And that's why I'm so angry, is that, you know, if you can pay these people and keep them going, you have to, you know, and you'll make it up later on.
Can I just round off a couple of lines coming across my Reuters finishing up the quarters, because some of the European stock indexes have closed. They go into auction now, so this is a preliminary close, what we got so far. So Britain's FTSE at the moment is now on target for the worst quarter since 1987, down 14%. Italy's FTSE MIB is now marking, I don't know if you've got a bell you can ring, the worst quarter ever. 27% down. Wow. Down 22% just in March, which is its worst month ever in Italy. European travel and leisure stocks are in the target for their worst quarterly performers, down 42% for their worst quarter ever. Euro stocks down 23% for the worst quarter since 2002, down 15%, ring the bell, for its worst month ever since they formulated Euro stocks 50. And the list goes on, Jen. So this is really, you think it feels bad when you open your statements? It is bad everywhere around the world. In fact, it's worse than it's ever been in some places in Europe. So just remember that. It's not just us feeling sorry for ourselves in South Africa.
No.
Anyway, we're
not in isolation.
Today. You should be happy.
Dress those windows. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your insight this evening. David Shapiro is the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, working from home. Nick Kunze is from Sanlam Private Wealth in Johannesburg as well, but also working from home. I'm Lindsay Williams from Rotterdam, working from home, and we'll be back on Thursday together. Nick Kunze will be back with me tomorrow morning. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.